Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Myers & Associates, serving the Midwest with industrial maintenance products and services. Call them at 515-795-3676. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running. Welcome back to another week of Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, and Merry Christmas. We're actually recording this on Friday, but you'll be hearing it on Christmas Eve Day. So I just want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas, and hopefully you have a great weekend. This is Shane Vanderhart, and in studio I got my daughter, Kelvy.
Hello.
And you're going to get to hear Moron today, because, you know, when Brian is here, Ron never gets any, gets a word in edgewise.
That's right. He's a talkative fellow.
He is. So, we've, you know, got a special program planned for you. You know, I threw it together 5 minutes before the show. So,
gosh, that's more prep time than Mac.
I know.
Sorry, Mac.
Hey, just to start off here, favorite Christmas memory or favorite thing to do on Christmas?
Oh, goodness. Come back to me.
Okay, Ron.
Memory-wise, one of the things I remember the most probably is we would go out to my grandpa and grandma Carlson's in Ogden, where I grew up, for Christmas Eve, usually.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes that was before the candlelight service, sometimes after. But my grandmother would make a dinner and stuff, and she would always make a birthday cake. And as a kid, you know, I was just kind of like, why are you making a birthday cake? And she goes, well, because it's Jesus' birthday. And I always thought that was such a cool deal that she made sure that us little kids, anyway,
kind of understood
why this thing was happening.
It's not about Santa Claus. It's not about getting presents. Yeah. It's not about the tree and some of these other things. It's about the birth of Christ. So, Kelvy.
Well, every Christmas seems to be different, so I think that the main thing that I really appreciate is that it just kind of slows down. You're not necessarily rushed. I don't know, maybe some of you are.
Christmas is stressful for, I think I saw a survey, it's like 50% of some people find Christmas to be extremely stressful.
Wow.
I think they're doing it wrong. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm a college student. We don't, you know, get stressed out when we don't have to. Just slowing down and spending time with family, I think, is the thing I appreciate the most. And getting a little bit of extra sleep. And
Being a member of your family, that makes me feel special.
Oh, well, good. I try.
I remember when I was a kid, we would always do family, you know, presents from family on Christmas Eve. And then Santa Claus, and I won't get into Santa Claus because there might be young ears listening. But, you know, we do that in the morning. Mm-hmm. But you know, I remember one Christmas break, we as a family got an Intellivision.
Oh,
I don't know
wow.
if you remember those.
Yes.
Okay, because you know we used to joke. You remember Kelvy? We always say second best for the Vanderhart family.
Oh yeah.
All right. That tradition got started before you were born. That was even
good
when
to
I
know.
Was a kid. So
no.
Because Atari was the you know the,
yeah,
the main
absolutely.
Thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You had to have an Atari.
So, but not the Vanderhart family. Yeah. Second best for the Vanderhart family. So we got an Intellivision, which actually it was a lot of fun. I remember we binge played, had a family Donkey Kong tournament.
Oh wow!
Which I think I won. So anyway, that was fun. We didn't go to church a whole lot when I was growing up, but obviously now, you know, going to Christmas Eve services, I enjoy. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, this is a unique weekend. Got Christmas Eve on Saturday and Christmas on Sunday.
Yeah.
And a lot of churches are canceling Sunday services. What do you guys think about that?
I'm not sure that they get the point.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like if you're a church, you should clearly get the theological implications behind Christmas and get the purpose of Christmas.
Right.
And yet you're canceling your service in order to celebrate Christmas. I'm not quite sure that they understand completely.
That's interesting.
I understand it from a practical standpoint.
Right.
That they probably have a lot of folks traveling and stuff.
And hard to get volunteers.
Yeah. But I'm almost kind of like in Kelvy's camp too. It's like, why not just have a single service, maybe later in the morning.
Right.
For anybody who can come or wants to come.
Right.
And kind of split the difference, so to speak.
Yeah, I was going to say, if maybe if you're going to cancel anything, cancel your Christmas Eve service.
Yeah.
Now, Brian would say, why are you doing a Christmas Eve service?
Yeah.
Because I don't think his church does anything like that. They don't do holidays.
Mm-hmm.
From my perspective, yeah, Sunday is your main day. That's when people, I'm just thinking in terms of visitors too. You know,
yeah.
You got somebody come on Sunday. What? There's no church. You know, what's up with that?
Mm-hmm.
Again, having been a former pastor, I understand too that, you know, I feel for pastors that I got like four Christmas Eve services and now I got to go back and do, two or three services on a Sunday.
Sure.
Look at Lutheran Church of Hope, for instance.
Oh,
my goodness. They started their Christmas Eve services like yesterday.
Yep.
I get that. It's hard on staff. It's hard on volunteers. But, yeah, I think you guys are right. Just plan a service, maybe just one service.
Mm-hmm.
And allow people to decide what they're going to do, you know,
yeah.
rather than decide for you. And if you're, you know, if you're a church leader, if you're on an elder board or a deacon board, keep in mind that, you know, maybe you're be mindful of your pastor's time as well. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I wanted to talk about today. We're avoiding politics.
Yay!
You're very welcome. I came across this clip from R.C. Sproul, who I think he still teaches at Reformed Theological Seminary down in Orlando. He's a co-teaching pastor at a St. Andrew's Church in Florida as well. He's launched the ministry called Legionnaire Ministries. Anyway, he's talking about the incarnation of God, and what's Christmas really all about? Let's go ahead and play. This is a lengthy clip.
What we celebrate at Christmas is not so much the birth of a baby, as important as that is, but what's so significant about the birth of that particular baby is that in this birth, we have the incarnation of God himself. An incarnation means a coming in the flesh. We know how John begins his gospel, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." So in that very complicated introductory statement, he distinguishes between the Word and God, and then in the next breath, identifies the two. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. And then at the end of the prologue, he says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us." Now, in this enfleshment, if you will, of Christ appearing on this planet, it's not that God suddenly changes through a metamorphosis into a man, so that the divine nature sort of passes out of existence or comes into a new form of fleshiness. No, the incarnation is not so much a subtraction as it is an addition, where the eternal second person of the Trinity takes upon himself a human nature and joins his divine nature to that human nature for the purpose of redemption. In the 19th century, liberal scholars propounded a doctrine called the kenotic theory of the incarnation. And you may have heard it, the idea being that when Jesus came to this earth, he laid aside his divine attributes so that the God-man, at least touching his deity, no longer had the divine attributes of omniscience, omnipotence, and all the rest. But of course, that would totally deny the very nature of God, who is immutable. Even in the incarnation, the divine nature does not lose his divine attributes. He doesn't communicate them to the human side. He doesn't deify the human nature. But in the mystery of the union between the divine and the human natures of Jesus, the human nature is truly human. It's not omniscient. It's not omnipotent. It's none of those things. But at the same time, the divine nature remains fully and completely divine. B.B. Warfield, the great scholar at Princeton, in remarking on the kenotic theory of his day, said the only kenosis that theory proves is the kenosis of the brains of the theologians who are propagating it, that they've emptied themselves of their common sense. But in any case, what is emptied is glory, privilege, exaltation. Jesus, in the incarnation, makes himself of no reputation. He allows his own divine exalted standing to be subjected to human hostility and human criticism and denial. He took the form of a bondservant and coming in the likeness of men. This is an amazing thing, that he doesn't just come as a man, he comes as a slave. He comes in a station that carries with it no exaltation, no dignity, only indignity. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient even to the point of death, the shameful death of the cross.
And he was referring to Philippians 2, which is actually, it's not a traditional Christmas passage, but it's one of my favorite passages. And that word kenosis is the Greek word for emptied. He's right. I think there's room for disagreement on what that word actually means. But yeah, Jesus didn't set aside his divine nature, but he certainly didn't exercise omnipresence, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
As far as omniscience, I think you see that in the Gospels. Or how would he know what people were thinking?
Absolutely.
So, it's something to ponder, but when I think about this, I think about, you know, here we got the second person of the Trinity, co-creator of the universe, coming in the form of a baby. The God of the universe in diapers. And just how humbling that would be. To put yourself in a position where you're vulnerable like that. And also, too, and this is what people need to remember. I see a lot of people who put so much emphasis on Christmas and kind of downplay Easter. And I think they have that backwards, because Christmas is all about Easter. It's all about God sending his son, Jesus Christ, to die.
Mm-hmm.
We have a baby that was born who was fashioned for a Roman cross. That's his sole purpose for coming, to seek and to save those who are lost. I think if we don't ponder that, if we don't think about that, if we don't celebrate that, we're missing what Christmas is really all about. I'm talking a lot. I want you guys. What do you guys think? No? Okay.
Crickets.
What
can we say?
Okay. It's hopefully you're in a church that celebrates that, that talks about that, that uplifts that, that you have a gospel-centered Christmas, that it's not about that baby in a manger, even though it starts there, but that baby grew up into a man who was perfectly, though he was in human form, he was without sin. And that was the case because he was the perfect sacrifice for our sin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why he came. So, and this gets, you know, you get to think about the virgin birth. We're going to talk a little bit about that later in the third segment, referring to an article by Kevin DeYoung. I just hope that you're at a church that celebrates this. We need to keep We need to keep our eyes on Jesus. We need to make sure that Jesus is the reason we celebrate. If you're stressed out this holiday season, if you're stressed out over Christmas, hopefully, well, now that's maybe a few of us. I think I'm probably going to be doing some shopping today. we're doing it wrong if we're so stressed out. This is really about Jesus and celebrating that, and everything else is secondary, you know. Okay, guys, you need to talk. I can't. I'm not going to do a monologue for like the last minute here. So what are your thoughts when you heard R.C. Sproul?
I really like that he pulled out the Philippians 2 passage, because I think a lot of people forget about that. That lately has been something for me. It's like, if the Savior of the world was humble enough to do that, you can be humble in other areas of your life.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think that we really, truly forget how much humility, how much sacrifice there was involved in the quote-unquote story of Christmas. And we like to hallmark it, and we like to make it kitschy and cute, but it truly was a sacrificial story, and it truly, you know, took the God of the universe humbling himself. And so I think that there's so much depth behind it that when you pull that passage into, it just reveals another facet of it.
Well, you know, when you said that, too, in the context of Philippians 2, it starts off, when the Apostle Paul says, first, in verse 3, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Yeah, Jesus humbled himself. We need to humble ourselves as well. Hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about human trafficking and something Kelvy's been doing this month. It's been pretty interesting. Anyway, we'll see you in a bit.
Hi, this is Brian Myers of Myers & Associates. If you're involved in maintenance at a manufacturing plant, you know how costly it can be when a machine goes down. And if the reason that machine went down is because the electronic controls on it failed, it can really be problematic if those electronics are obsolete. Well, not to worry. We represent Providence Industrial Electronics Repair, and they can get your machine up and running in no time. They repair boards, drives, servo motors, light curtains, you name it. So if you need industrial electronics repaired at your plant, or if you have other industrial maintenance needs, give me a call at 515-490-2640. That's Myers & Associates, 515-490-2640. Myers & Associates, keeping your operations running.
Welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Travis Riswold of Modern Woodmen of America. Call Travis at 515-883-0029, and he can help you find the life insurance
you need.
So, want to clarify something here, because clarification is needed. Kelvy, the activity Kelvy's doing this month is not human trafficking. She is fighting against human trafficking. And how are you doing that, Kelvy?
I'm partnering with Dressember, which is run by the Dressember Foundation. Basically, the founder, Blythe Hill, was a fashion design major in college, and she started to feel very passionate about and strongly about fighting human trafficking in modern-day society. And she didn't know how she could do that because she wasn't a social worker, she wasn't going to be a police officer, and she had no clue how somebody with a fashion design major could really help in that effort. And so one year, she was starting to feel a little bit like everything in her life was stagnant. And because, like I've said a couple times now, she was a fashion design major, whenever that happened to her, she created some design challenge for herself, and she found that that got her out of the rut she was in. And so this stagnant point fell in a December. And so she decided that for that month, a cold month where people typically don't wear dresses,
I never wear dresses.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have been tempted to wear a kilt, though, kind of breezy.
Don't do that either. She decided that since it was December, nobody was really expecting people to be in dresses. She was going to wear a dress every day that month and figure out ways to layer it, figure out ways to style it, and just kind of help her brain get going again. And so she did it. And then the next year, people came up to her, and apparently they had taken notice. And they said, hey, we really want to join you in doing this dress thing again. Can you, you know, are you planning on doing it? And she said, sure, we can do it. The next year, their friends came up to her, and so on it went. And so she decided, maybe I should figure out a point to put behind this rather than people just gathering
together.
We're just
going to wear dresses. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. What's the broader point? So for a few years now, I believe this is the fourth year, the Dressember Foundation has been created. So basically what happens is women will commit to wearing a dress every single day of the month. There are some hardcore people who will wear just one dress every day for a month. They're dedicated. I don't do that, but they're dedicated. I don't think I'd have the time to just wash it every night, but who knows?
Maybe they only own one.
If you only own one, you can definitely do that. You can style it different ways. But some people only wear one dress a month. However, the whole concept is just a dress every day of a month. Not, you know, a skirt. You can put a skirt over a dress, but a dress every day for a month. You decide to do that. Then you go on to the Dressember Foundation's website, which is just the dressemberfoundation.org or dressember.org. And you create a fundraising page for yourself. And so when you decide to do that, after you've created the page, you set goals. You can do it as a team. Personally, I'm doing it with the Students Against Sexual Assault group on my campus. Two other girls and I from the group have decided to commit to doing this. And so that's pretty cool. We had an article run in the paper about us that we didn't find out was running until the next day. So, you know, things
right.
happen. But... so you can create this fundraiser.
So you've made it big in Hannibal.
Yeah, apparently Hannibal, Missouri doesn't have
famous.
Doesn't have a ton going on, but I'm happy that they decided to cover that, you know, versus the who's getting divorced this week.
That's true.
Yeah. So you create the fundraising page, and then basically social media becomes your best friend for the next month. You post pictures personally, and everybody does this a little bit differently. Personally, I decided to post a picture every day. With just a stat about human trafficking or a reason why I was doing it, or the link to the fundraising page. And I fell off the wagon a little bit the past couple days. I've been battling some weird virus, but...
So I'm glad you're on the other side of the room.
Yeah, I'm isolated from everybody in here. So you use social media how you will. Like I said, everybody does it differently. The wonderful thing about this is it's incredibly unique. And people kind of wonder, well, does that really do anything? Because you see all sorts of, there was the ice bucket challenge that was raising money for, I believe.
ALS.
Yes, ALS. There have been other challenges like that. So people have asked me, well, does it work? And I just tell them, well, the Dressember Foundation has raised $800,000 so far, and that funds over 125 rescue missions. So you tell me. And personally...
And that's just this year?
That's just this year.
Wow.
Their goal is 1.5 million, and I believe we're going to make that goal. My team alone set a goal of $1,000, and we've been upping it because people are surpassing it. So people, if you're wondering if it works, it really does. And so...
So why did she choose, say, I'm going to focus on human trafficking? What was the rationale behind that?
People don't realize, but today there are more slaves in captivity than ever before in history. There are 27 million and counting people who are taken captive. Every 30 seconds, somebody else becomes a slave. And so it's a really huge issue that is amazingly not talked about.
Okay. So in Iowa, we feel the effects of human trafficking here in Iowa, too, having I-35. And I-80 go across, you know, so it's something that it's not, you wouldn't think that it's a problem here, but it is. I mean, not that necessarily the women are coming from here, but sometimes they come through here.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a not talked about issue. And what people don't realize is that it's not just, you know, maybe on the coasts or by the border. It's in their hometowns. It's anywhere there's intersecting highways, there's anywhere there's a big place of travel. I go to school next to the Mississippi River, and there are also some big interstates and highways nearby. So we see a lot of human trafficking in the Hannibal, Missouri area. The Super Bowl is a huge point of human trafficking. Big sporting events are huge points, and people just don't realize because they haven't been told what to look for. They haven't been told about the problem at hand, and so they just kind of don't notice it.
You're listening to Caffeinate Thoughts Radio, and with us, Kelby's here, and we got more on.
Absolutely.
And we're talking about human trafficking and the December Foundation. Because as a guy, I mean, I could wear a kilt, but I don't really want to.
We have a way guys can participate.
Okay. How can they participate?
If a guy wants to participate in December, because my brother pointed out earlier, you know, before I started the month, he said, well, this seems pretty exclusive. It does seem pretty exclusive, but we have made ways for men to participate.
Okay.
You choose to wear a bow tie or some sort of tie every day of the month. And so there are a lot of December guys that are posting, and they look really snazzy because they've decided to just go all out and not just wear a tie, you know, with a t-shirt, but they've been wearing shirts and ties every day this month, which I'm sure for some of them, their families are extremely confused.
Yeah. Knowing how some of your generation dresses, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you just take the leap, and if girls can wear dresses for a month, guys can definitely wear a shirt and tie for a month. And so they've decided to do that.
Definitely. I actually think I've got enough ties where I almost have one tie for each.
I'm sure.
I've got ties I've never worn.
Mm-hmm.
Because I hate ties.
But. Yeah. And the December Foundation, it raises money for other organizations. So it in itself isn't funding rescue missions. It's giving the money almost entirely to organizations such as A21, our International Justice Mission. There are a few other organizations along with that too, but those are the two really, really large ones. They are out there on the front lines doing the getting your hands dirty work every day. I think A21 almost every day posts a picture talking about one survivor rescued, three survivors rescued. And so they really are out there truly rescuing people, truly doing the legislative work that needs to be done, working with local law enforcement, getting their hands in there and getting work done. And so the December Foundation just gives them a boost in their work.
Yeah, I just want to talk a little bit about how we can help fight human trafficking. I just looked at the State Department's website. They've got 15 ways you can help human trafficking. One is, first idea was learn the indicators of human trafficking so you can help identify a potential trafficking victim. Human trafficking awareness training is available for individuals, businesses, first responders, law enforcement, educators, and federal employees, among others. Because we are not immune here in Iowa to this, and we do need to have our, you know, eyes and ears open. See something, say something, right?
Exactly. If you see anything out of the ordinary, you can report it. Especially with us in Iowa, in central Iowa, living so close to interstates, one big way of travel is semis, things like that.
Right.
I was recently with a friend, and this was before I started to become passionate about the topic. We were walking down kind of near Smoky Row in Des Moines, if that's a reference point for some of you. I'm as much of a coffee addict as my father, so... And we were walking near Smoky Row, and we saw just an unmarked semi just idling, and there was a guy that was just pacing next to it looking very, you know, just suspicious of anybody who would drive by on the phone. He was near a store that was definitely closed, was definitely not accepting product that night. Just kind of out of the ordinary, but I didn't notice it until she said something. And she said, "That looks so shady, and it might be nothing, but it could be something."
Mm-hmm.
And that stuck out to me because she went and flagged down a police officer that had pulled somebody over in the area, had him come check it out. You know, it could have been nothing, but it could have been something, and she was willing to step up and say something about it. You know, and how many of us pass by random unmarked semis thinking, oh, well, they're probably doing something, when it could be a human trafficking situation, we wouldn't even know about it. So just really opening your eyes to the things that seem out of the normal, out of the ordinary.
Some of those indicators would be like living with an employer. That's mm-hmm. kind of strange. Poor living conditions. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're being trafficked, but that's one indicator. Poor living conditions, multiple people in cramped space, inability to speak to an individual alone. Answers appear to be scripted and rehearsed. Employers holding identity documents, signs of physical abuse, submissive or fearful, unpaid or paid very little, under 18 and in prostitution. So, you know, those are some indicators. And again, yeah, just, you know, you see something strange like that, it doesn't hurt to call. I mean, it could have been the guy who's just lost and he was on the phone getting directions, or it could have been something more nefarious.
Exactly.
So, you know, also another idea they list on state.gov is be conscientious and informed consumer. Discover your slavery footprint. I didn't realize there was such a thing. Ask who picked your tomatoes or who made your clothes, and check out the Department of Labor's list of goods produced by child labor or forced labor. Encourage companies to take steps to investigate and prevent human trafficking in their supply chains, and publish the information for consumer awareness.
This is Caffeinated Thoughts. So one of the big things that you can really check out and look into is coffee. If you buy fair trade coffee, you know where it's coming from. You know that there was nobody in slavery who played a part in growing your coffee.
And define fair trade.
It'll be stamped. It's
Oh, what pretty, does that mean, though?
Yes, I'm good.
Okay.
There. It'll be stamped on your coffee, and basically it means that everybody involved with the production of that coffee bean was paid a wage, was not enslaved, was not there as part of the labor industry, which people, when they hear slavery today or they hear human trafficking, they really think sexual. And that does play a large part. That's roughly 80% of human trafficking victims. However, labor trafficking is another 20%. So that's things like making your clothes, things like growing your coffee, your chocolate. That's another big aspect. You can definitely find fair trade marked chocolate as well. Along with that, there's also organ trafficking. And there's a bunch of random, just small anomalies in within this too, where we don't have a big category for them. But organ trafficking is basically somebody was so impoverished that they decided to sell organs, or that they were forced to against their will. Recently, A21 let out a story about a survivor they rescued who was so in poverty that she decided to sell some organs that, quote-unquote, were not needed. She went in for the surgery, and after she came out of the surgery, she was locked in a room and was not... Actually, I think it was a he. I've been saying she. I think it was a he. He was not allowed to leave. And so A21 played a part in getting him out of that situation. But labor trafficking and organ trafficking are aspects of it too, and so it's important to look at the diverse and not just think, well, you know, I'm not playing into sexual trafficking at all. Hopefully, you could be playing into the labor trafficking without even realizing.
Yep. Check your slavery footprint. Hey, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, this is Brian Myers. When I needed a better life insurance plan, I found it with Travis Risvold of Modern Woodmen of America. When I first met Travis, he wasn't like some other life insurance agents that can be pushy and try to get you to buy something. Travis just made himself available to me. That was it. He told me to let him know if and when I needed anything, and he stayed in touch. When the day came and I did need to make some changes with my life insurance, Travis met with me and walked me through several options so I could make an informed decision. Ultimately, it was the best decision for my situation. So if you need a better or the best life insurance plan for you, call my friend Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. His number is 515-883-0029. Travis Risvold with Modern Woodmen. He can help you find the life insurance you need. Call him at 515-883-0029.
Welcome to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio, a stimulating look at culture, current events, faith, and politics from a Christian and conservative point of view. We don't just talk on the radio, we blog too. Check us out at caffeinatedthoughts.com. Now grab a cup of coffee and join us. This is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio.
And welcome back to Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Caffeinated Thoughts Radio is brought to you in part by Crosswalk Ministries with Scott Owen, who offers biblical counseling and conciliation. Give them a call, 515-292-7141, or go to crosswalkcounseling.org. Hey, instead of a typical news rundown, I just want to, again, kind of keep in the theme of, well, you know, today is Christmas Eve day. If you're listening live on, we're not recording live, but if you're listening live on the radio instead of our podcast, today is Christmas Eve Day. I wanted to share an article. I shared it on my own Facebook page. Kirsten Powers, she's got an interesting story. I hope my goal is in 2017 to get her on the radio because I think she's got a fascinating story. She grew up pretty secular, was a Democratic strategist. You may know of her as a Fox News contributor. I think she's at CNN now. I think she's still involved in the Democratic Party, but she's found Jesus, and she's an evangelical Christian. She goes to Redeemer Presbyterian Church in Manhattan, where Tim Keller's the pastor there, if you're familiar with his work. But she wrote an article for Christianity Today, or actually as an excerpt from a book, I believe, that they published at Christianity Today. That was published a year ago, but I just found it this Christmas season. She said, basically, becoming Christian ruined my love of Christmas. And here's kind of the money quote. She shared her story. Then she said, and talked about how she came to faith in Christ, and said, ironically, after all this, Christmas lost its luster for me. The rank materialism became too much to bear, and the Christmas season morphed from being a time I savored into something I tried to survive each year. Santa Claus, Christmas trees, the holiday jingles, they all felt like pagan oppression. When people complained about a war on Christmas, I often smirked and thought to myself, where do I sign up? Honestly, when a sale at Crate and Barrel gets entangled with the birth of Jesus Christ, something has gone horribly wrong. But then I realized that I had allowed the secular celebrations of Christmas to crowd out its transcendent meaning. As theologian N.T. Wright points out, it's Christmas that is the moment when God launched a divine rescue mission of mankind. God didn't just condescend to come to earth as a human. He came as a helpless infant. The King of Kings was born in barnyard animals and piles of hay after his lowly parents were turned away from better lodgings. And when the Magi came to see the Lord, there was no security on hand to judge whether they were worthy. The Messiah was approachable. He was one of us, and at the same time, God with us. He was flesh. He would hunger, he would bleed, he would love, he would thirst, he would die. None of this would have happened had he not been born fully human, and again, fully God, which is hard for us to get our mind wrapped around. They call that the hypostatic union of Christ. Mm-hmm. That's the fancy theological term for that. Not half human, half God, fully human, fully God. And what helped make this possible, you know, a lot, and there's been among this kind of leading the second article by Kevin DeYoung, is a lot of people try to shoot down the virgin birth. Oh, the virgin birth isn't necessary. And Kevin DeYoung, in an article in the Gospel Coalition earlier this month, gave four reasons why the virgin birth is essential. He wrote, first, the virgin birth is essential to Christianity because it's has been essential to Christianity. He said, I know that sounds kind of weak, but it's true. I mean, it's right in the Apostles' Creed. It's a foundational doctrine of the faith. You cannot call yourself an Orthodox Christian, and I don't mean Orthodox as in Greek Orthodox. I mean Orthodox in that you believe in sound doctrine and not believe in the virgin birth. Because the Bible is very clear about this. It's, you know, Isaiah 7:14 prophesies that Christ will be born to a virgin. Second, the gospel writers, he writes, clearly believe that Mary was a virgin when Jesus was conceived. Why do you think this was important? Because...
I mean, there are so many people who have tried to discount it as he was really Joseph's.
Uh-huh.
And so by having a virgin birth, that goes away. I mean, people won't stop saying, well, he was Joseph's.
Right, right. So the third point is like, you know, the virgin birth demonstrates that Jesus was truly human and truly divine. Because if he was Joseph's child, then where does the divinity come in?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the biggest deal. It damages his claim of being God.
Yeah, Right. And something, too, ever since the fall of man, sinners beget sinners. And we needed somebody who's going to be sinless.
Yep.
And that wouldn't have happened had Jesus come from a normal, you know, human union. But no, the Holy Spirit conceived Jesus in Mary, and she gave birth. She, you know, a lot of people are like, what were you doing? Because they were engaged at the time, and engagement in Jewish culture means a lot more than engagement means now. I mean, it was almost literally like they entered into a marital covenant, but they hadn't consummated the relationship. Mm-hmm. So that's when, and the Bible talks about, you know, he was considering divorcing her. It's like, they weren't married yet. Well, technically, under Jewish customs, they almost were.
Yep.
And it's, if Joseph's not the child, or it's not his child, whose child is it? You know, that's what you imagine the, you know, I just imagine when Mary was hearing all this was going to, can you imagine the faith that she had, knowing what people were going to be thinking of her, mm-hmm. as a, you know, she was a teenager, basically an unwed teenager, and the relationship hasn't been consummated. So how in the world are you pregnant? You know, what were you doing? Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that. Fourth, he writes, the virgin birth is essential because it means Jesus did not inherit the curse of depravity that clings to Adam's race. I kind of got ahead of myself. Sinners beget sinners. So when somebody's asking, the virgin birth, it's not necessary. Yes, it is essential to our faith. It's essential to the doctrine of the incarnation. You can't have a full understanding of God, you know, the God-man, without knowing this. And there's some good reasons for that. Alistair Begg, he's a pastor. Is actually, I think he's on this station.
Yes, he is. At 7:30.
Yes, at 7:30. So be sure to tune in. He actually lived in his area for a while. I was a youth pastor in his area, and he was still at that church.
Wow.
He's been there a long time. Parkside Church, I think, near Chagrin Falls, Ohio. He wrote, "Why I Changed My Mind About Nativity Scenes." He was kind of he was dismissive of nativity scenes. He said, so there was a time I happily dismissed nativity scenes as unrealistic and trivial, but not anymore. I've changed my views because our culture has changed. As a society becomes increasingly secular, it seems to me that just about anything that ties Christmas back to the historical account of Jesus' birth provides an important point of connection. These small displays are an opportunity for engagement and conversation between those in our communities who celebrate nothing more than Santa and those who love the message of Jesus' incarnation. In fact, I'm always intrigued when someone is offended by the presence of a nativity scene. It's quite fascinating that people could be offended by a collection of miniature ecclesiastical characters. Why do people get upset? Perhaps it's because they recognize what's being said in that small scene is challenging and even personal. This happened. This is history. There is a Jesus, and you have to deal with him one way or another. The person who gets annoyed by public nativity scenes is someone I want to have a conversation with. Actually, maybe that the people who often miss the message of the nativity scene are Christians. How easy is it to rush through the whole Christmas experience, the music in the mall, the services in your church, the presents in your house, and be left with the sweet sentiments but no real worship in your heart? How easy is it to sing along to Once in a Royal David City and neither feel awe nor offense, but simply nothing much at all? Anyway, with those that thought, this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment.
Front seat leaning, baby, come give me a kiss. Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, Down Home, American Kids.
Have you ever noticed that the person who committed to meeting you halfway is a real bad judge of distance? That gap can cause some serious conflict. I'm Scott Owen with Crosswalk Ministries of Central Iowa, and it's time to pause for peace. If you're in that 50-50 relationship that feels more like 50-20, Why not consider changing up the goal? If you're in a conflict, then you really have 100% of a conflict, regardless of who caused the most and who has tried the hardest. And chances are the other party thinks that you're a poor judgment of distance too. Jesus said, if your brother offends you, go to him. But he also said, if you realize you offended your brother, you go. No one should be drawing a line in the sand and waiting for the other to cross over. Rather than a 50-50 approach, why not be committed 100% to resolving the conflict? If you're stuck at the 50, 60, or even 80% level, give us a call at 515-635-5465 or check us out online at crosswalkcounseling.org.
Hey, I'd like to close out today's show a little bit differently. There's a new hymn I just encountered called Exalt the Savior's Birth, which was written by Matt Boswell and D.A. Carson. D.A. Carson is a professor of New Testament at Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. I talked earlier about having a gospel-centered Christmas, and I think this hymn pretends that. So let's go ahead and play that.
Shepherds watch their flocks at night, attending lowly sheep. Now within a cattle shed, a much stranger watch they keep. Today a Savior has been born, and He is Christ the Lord. Placed within a humble trough, this baby must be adored. Pagan wise men from the east seek out the infant king. Trackless miles behind them lie, and now all their reverence brings. They have come to worship Him with spices and with gold. Countless millions seek Him still, whose advent was long foretold.
And this is Caffeinated Thoughts Radio. I want to wish you and yours a very Merry Christmas. And make sure to check us out at CaffeinatedThoughts.com. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Be our friend. We'll see you next week, everybody.